Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Oh, g'day, mate. There you go.
Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, with Lethal Mullet, all the way here in Gold Coast in Australia. And on the other side of the waterway, and of course, the United States, is my dear pal, voice actor, director, and of course, amazing man himself. And of course, You know him from many characters. The one, the only, Richard Epcar, buddy. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. I'm great. I'm happy to be here, buddy. I apologize for the other day.
You know, here's a time where a lot of people will have you on to chat about, obviously, your own projects and stuff like that you're always working on. But this is actually something that you're a massive fan of and have been since an early age, James Bond.
Yeah, yeah. My introduction to James Bond was my mom died when I was very young. I was 15 years old, and she passed away. And, you're feeling kind of low. And my sister took me to see Goldfinger, which I knew nothing about James Bond at the time. And I went and saw that movie, and it blew me away. And I was a huge, huge fan ever since then. And I thought I'd either want to be an actor or a secret agent. And I'm 6'6", so I probably wouldn't be a very good secret agent. You could spot me in a crowd pretty easily. So I decided to become an actor.
And, you know, I think the big thing is about it back in, the 60s in particular, I mean, even my parents have said, you know, you didn't have things like Star Wars and all that the kids get into now, or Marvel, whatever it is. I mean, You know, Bond was the big franchise.
Yeah, in many ways it still is. I mean, he is like the original superhero. He really is. But I just loved it. We started talking about, before you started recording, we were talking about Never Say Never Again, which is basically Thunderball. And the reason it's Thunderball, I'm sure you know all this stuff, is that Kevin McCrory owned the rights for that particular thing. And so he wanted to shoot another. They actually wanted to do a whole series of Bond movies without Ian. And Ian's going, no, that's our guy and that's our projects and you can't do that. So they were in court for a long time. And the courts ruled finally, after a very long period of time, that they could shoot this one show that was basically a remake of Thunderball called Never Say Never Again, which is not one of my favorite Bond movies. And the biggest problem for me with that movie is the music. The music is just horrible. Man. It is a terrible score. And I'm trying to remember who did it. It was just awful. Awful, awful. I don't know why they would ever contract that guy to do the music. It was really bad. And of course, you know, they couldn't use the James Bond theme because that was all owned by Ian, and they couldn't use, Shaken Not Stirred or My Name is Bond, James Bond, all that stuff was copywritten and they couldn't use that stuff. So it lacked a lot of the familiar things that made a Bond movie a Bond movie. And I also thought that the characters were kind of way over the top. It was very cartoony and just wasn't, I don't know, just wasn't a great Bond movie by any stretch. Of course, it did have Sean Connery in it. And, he's always fun to watch, you know.
He is Bond, isn't he? I mean, at the end of the day, we've grown up watching his movies. I mean, out here in Australia. Oh, yeah. That's this the one.
John, I don't know if you can see it. It says Sean Connery. Oh, that's the wrong one. I have it over here. I've got a different one over here. It says Sean Connery is James Bond, and that's in the You Only Live Twice. You can't see my office, but I have Bond posters all around my office.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music. where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
You know what's great is, you know, I mean, you go back to even the novels, you know, the novels have got a certain, you know, feel of what Bond is. And I think maybe they've tried to do that with Daniel Craig. I mean, even on a former podcast we did years ago, we were talking about how Daniel Craig's tried to grab Sean's, I think, strength and darkness, if there's some way about it too, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I really loved it because I think they kind of got off the rails a little bit towards the end with all that stuff. And they were getting, it was getting very cartoony and silly. And I'm glad they kind of grounded it again and brought it back and made it grittier. And I mean, I think, you know, if Bond were a real character, I think it would be kind of dark and gritty and, you know, the things he has to go through and that sort of thing. So I appreciated his portrayal, and actually Timothy Dalton started that whole thing. He started, you know, going back and trying to recreate what Ian Fleming had created in the books. And that is kind of a burned out agent who's just basically, you know, has seen a lot of crap and just doesn't want to, you know, but, you know, and the humor of that whole thing comes out of, you know, the danger, really, you know, he has to make fun and I, that's where I thought Sean, you know, Sean to me was the quintessential Bond. And because, you know, out of all of those guys, he could sit and have dinner with the king, but still excuse himself and go in the alley and beat the crap out of six guys. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if that's true with all the other ones. You know, I think some of them could sit with the king, or Roger Moore could certainly sit with the king. I mean, I think they could probably all sit with the king, but I don't know about going in the alley and believably beating up six guys. I think Daniel Craig has proved that he's pretty tough, and he's probably one of the toughest Bonds, if not the toughest Bond. But you know, I think, you know, you look at Roger Moore, and you know, Roger Moore was great. I love Roger Moore, and I don't want to take anything away from him. Also, they wrote, you know, they tried to really kind of highlight the comedy with him, and I think he had two really good films, which was The Spy Who Loved Me and For Your Eyes Only. Those were my two favorite Roger Moore movies because they weren't quite as, you know, cartoonish, you know, and I like that. I mean, for me, the world of Bond is kind of a magical place where they're like letting you into this world that's fantastic. And I, you know, I remember when I was a kid and I'd go see these movies and those sets, I mean, even where they would have a meeting, they'd have a meeting in something that looked like an incredible museum or something, you know, or I mean, it was, you know, it was just, it was magical. There was something really magical about that whole thing. And I feel like they're kind of getting away from that a little bit. Although I did like Daniel Craig's run for the most part. I did not like the fact that they made him growing up with Blofeld. I thought that was ridiculous. I don't know who came up with that or what they were smoking that day, but probably the same guy who decided that, what's his name? Lightyear, Buzz Lightyear, was the nemesis Zurg in his own movie, that he became his own nemesis. It was probably the same guy who came up with that idea, you know?
It's crazy. I mean, they start off with a really interesting run. I mean, Casino Royale with Craig was, I mean, it's one of the all-time best reinventions, I guess, of the character. But I think they got a bit carried away with restarting each time. Like, I mean, Roger Moore's ones were always as if he was tailing off an old adventure and then going into a new one. And I think that, you know, it's a new adventure each time is really what it should be.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, I do agree with you too. Casino Royale was great, but Casino Royale also followed a lot of the book, which was wonderful. You know, the thing with the torture and the thing with, you know, of course they played, you know, poker in the new one instead of chemin de fer. But, you know, I'm just saying basically they kind of followed the book in many ways on the movie. And as a result, it was great. And it felt like really, you know, quintessential Bond. And then they kind of went off the tracks a little bit here and there, but I mean, you know, the thing about the Daniel Craig movies were they were always tough and gritty, and you believe this guy could really handle himself. And that's, and I think that's important, for Bond to do that. I'm not so sure about Pierce Brosnan taking on the six guys in the alley, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, listen, I think he did a great job too. And I think had he had the opportunity to do something a little more gritty, I think he would have jumped at it. I've read from interviews with him that he, you know, was felt they were getting too, you know, fantastical and crazy with this stuff. And he would like to do more of a, you know, a realistic Bond. So he never got the chance to do that, but it would be interesting to see his version of that.
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, it's interesting. Casino Royale, directed by Martin Campbell. And then he did kind of the same with Pierce after Dalton with GoldenEye, which was an interesting movie in itself.
Yeah. No, GoldenEye was actually my favorite of all the Pierce movies. It was a really good Bond. And I think that was a great one. And Martin Campbell, you know, nobody knows Bond better than that guy. He really does great work, and I'm kind of surprised they didn't have him do a few more of them. But you know, what are you going to do?
It's like look back at watching the movies now, and we've got a pretty big home cinema here now with a full projector and everything. Like, it's not until you see Bond on that format. We've gone right back to Dr. No and forward, and I'm currently up to On Her Majesty's Secret Service, seeing Lazenby running down the ice with a Sterling machine gun and stuff like that, and just him take on Blofeld in this thing. And that was a unique movie. I mean, it's a story that really hadn't been done with Sean, but imagine Sean had done that film. I think that would have been even bigger.
Well, that's a heartbreaker, because that was another movie that they actually followed the book, and they were very close to the book. And Sean would have been, who else is going to wear kilts better than Sean? You know, I mean, he would look great in that part. He and Diana Rigg would have been magical together. I mean, the two of them would have been phenomenal together. And actually, I think Sean should have been in that movie. That was the one he should have gone out on. The movie I think that Roger Moore should have started with was for Diamonds Are Forever, because I think that's more of a Roger Moore kind of a Bond caper. You know, the whole thing was kind of a little silly on the silly side, you know, I think Roger Moore would have been more apropos for that particular movie. And I think Sean would have been great in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. You know, not that Lazenby didn't do a good job. He did, but you know, he certainly, you know, I hate to say this, he's no Sean Connery. And he seems to think he is. I mean, I've seen him at a couple of conventions. I actually had drinks with him and sat down with him, and he's a very nice guy. And you know, listen, I kind of feel bad for him, honestly, because I think had he not listened to his friends who told him to get out of the Bond franchise, he probably could have been a big star, and he would have done at least, you know, at least three or four or five more of those movies. You know, he could have just really done well, but you know.
It's interesting. Bond is a big character, but the villains are just as crazy. I mean, we go back to Dr. No, for example. You know, a character, you know, it could be out of a Fu Manchu movie as far as the way it was delivered. You know, interesting villains across the most part. I keep going back to me, Ulrich Goldfinger is the be-all and end-all. But what about yourself? What was your favorite villain in the franchise?
I think both of those you mentioned are great. Dr. No is an amazing character. And I'm a huge fan of Joseph Wiseman. I've seen him on stage, and he was a phenomenal actor. And, you know, I think they, you know, Sean, he's talked about this too in the past, that they just did this little movie. They didn't think much of it. Originally they wanted Cary Grant to play Bond. And honestly, Cary Grant would have been a great choice for Bond, but Cary Grant said he wanted $1 million and he would only do one picture. Well, Dr. No was made for about $1 million. That was their entire budget. And, so they couldn't do that. But I think, you know, it's one of those things that really turned out for the best, because I don't, you know, Sean Connery became a huge international star from this, and he just brought something really unique and interesting to it. Aside from the fact that his accent was really, you know, engaging and unique, he just was an incredible actor. And whenever Sean is in anything, you immediately look at him. I mean, he just really has tremendous presence, and he's just a wonderful actor, and just really kind of downplayed all of the stuff, which made it even more real and interesting, I think. He just was a perfect fit as far as I'm concerned. And it's hard, you know, listen, I like all of the other Bonds. I really do. And I love Bond movies, so I hope they keep making them. But he, for me, will always be the gold standard.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think the thing is, Sean has a certain grittiness that made those, which, I mean, as you mentioned, they're fantasy films, really, at the heart of it. And I think having somebody that's earth and grounded, like soul to the earth, like Sean is, I mean, you know, coming from being a lorry driver in Scotland and in England, and coming thrust into wearing the tailored suits and getting out there with a pole for PPK, or as they say in, what was it? Is this Dan Beretta again? Yeah. Well, those things that M's trying, that repartee that they've all got with Moneypenny. I mean, that could all be silly, but he brings a groundedness to it, which, I mean, none of the others have really ever captured that.
Yeah. Well, I like Pierce, and I like Samantha Bond's relationship. I thought that was very real. And in fact, it was almost, heartbreaking when she was fantasizing in that one movie with the thing. She had the,
Oh, the VR, yeah.
Yeah, the what do they call those things? Anyway. But, I think that's an important element. The worst was Timothy Dalton's Moneypenny. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Caroline Bliss, I think, was her name. And she just was not good for that part at all. But Lois Maxwell was phenomenal as Moneypenny. And they really had a connection, her and Sean, definitely. And even with Roger Moore and her, they had a connection. And it really worked. But yeah, I love that unrequited love thing with Moneypenny. I think that's so interesting, and and I think there's part of Bond that really does, is affectionate towards her, but can't touch government property. So,
you know, what's great too is that we've got not only that, you've got this, quartermaster who has literally all these gadgets, and I think that's something that hasn't been touched in the last four or five movies with Craig. Occasionally here and there, he'll get something.
What's up with that? Yeah, I think they wanted to do less gadgets and more real, which is fine, But I mean, so the gadgets were a big part of the Bond movie. There's a wonderful show out right now. It's called 60 Years of James Bond, and they talk about all the music in the Bond. Have you seen it?
I've seen parts of it. Yeah,
you've got to watch the whole thing. It's just incredible. It's all of the composers and the singers and all the people that come together to create the music. And my contention has always been, I love John Barry. He was just a phenomenal composer. And John Barry's music to me was like a main character in all of the Bond movies, because it just, that really swept you into it. And I think David Arnold's music is phenomenal also. There's been a few clunkers along the way, but I think those two guys really got it and got that lush, epic. It just makes it epic, their music. It just brings it to that place where it just makes it so incredible and magical. And I think they got to continue doing that. We'll see what happens with the new Bond. Who do you think is going to be the new Bond? Do you have any ideas?
Well, this is the thing is, I mean, I don't know what they're going to try and do. I mean, there's a lot of talk about Idris Elba taking the role, and
I think he's actually said no, he's not going to do it. But he's too old at this point to be Bond, because he's in his late 40s, I think. And I think that if they wanted to have any kind of a series of films with him, he'll be like Roger Moore old by the end of it, which that last one with Roger Moore was kind of scary. It was like Grandpa Takes a Holiday. Let's see that one.
What's interesting, I mean, you got people that are looking at that and then looking really, really young, like a James Bond in his late 20s, but really the ideal age would be somewhere around late 30s, early 40s.
Well, he's 35 in the books, so that's a good starting point. And but you know, when you look at Sean and Dr. No, I mean, he was working out for the Mr. Universe contest. He just looked great. I mean, he just, you know, and it wasn't overdone either, you know, but he looked muscular and strong, but it wasn't like, you know, I am Mr. Bodybuilder, but he had a really great physique. He looked really strong. He looked athletic. He looked like he could do the stuff that James Bond needed to do and do it believably, you know? And I think that's really, really the point of it all. And Daniel Craig looked, you know, great. He looked tough as nails too. He was a good Bond. He wasn't quite as smooth or he didn't have the humor, you know, it didn't really kind of, it wasn't as easy for him as it was for Sean or Roger Moore or Pierce. It was a little tougher for him to be humorous, but I thought all in all, I thought he did an excellent job, you know.
He did. Yeah. What about yourself? Who do you think should take the role? Something like Henry Cavill, maybe, or Tom Hardy, or something along those lines?
Well, I think Henry Cavill really looks the part. I just worry if he can act the part, to be honest with you. I haven't seen anything that he's done that really shows me that he's an incredible actor. And I think you do. I mean, it's such a difficult part to cast because, as I said, you need the guy who can sit down with the king. You need the guy who can go in the alley and beat up six guys. And then you need the guy who's going to be suave and sophisticated, and you know, it's just a lot of elements to put together believably and make it work. I've been kind of toying with the idea of Sam Heughan, you know him from
Outlander.
I think he would be an interesting choice to play Bond. I think he would be good. He's another Scotsman, I think, going back to Sean, and he's tough as nails, and he looks great, and he's built like, you know, hell, you know, he looks great. And so I think he would possibly be a good choice for that. You know, he comes across as being very, very nice and sweet, but I think, you know, if he was Bond, he could be menacing and tough if he had to be.
It's an interesting role because, I mean, the character is an assassin, you know, for starters, for MI6, but he's also, he's got to be able to be cool under pressure. And when that pressure's on, still be able to put out the quip lines, you know, and have those lines play true. And, you know, there's very few people can do it. I mean, this whole franchise influenced George Lucas and Spielberg to do Raiders of the Lost Ark and obviously those movies.
Yeah.
And even dragged Sean into it in the third movie.
Yeah, they did. They did. It was great. I loved him and Harrison Ford together. They were wonderful. Yeah, you know, Spielberg kept wanting to direct a Bond movie. They wouldn't let him direct a Bond movie. So they just said, well, screw them, let's just come up with our own deal. And they did. And Indiana Jones is wonderful. I think they came up with a great show. And, you know, that was another thing where they wanted, originally they wanted Tom Selleck for Indiana Jones, and he couldn't do it because he was locked into Magnum. So they went with Harrison. And honestly, I think Harrison was a much better choice. And I think that he was perfect for that part. So once in a while, you know, the casting gods come together and they make the right choice, like with Sean and with Harrison Ford. I think, you know, you see some of these movies sometimes and you can't imagine anyone else doing those parts, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it all comes together so well. I mean, it goes also down to, as you mentioned earlier, you know, the different parts that make Bond Bond. And I think one of the things is we've talked about gadgets, but there's some really interesting ones they've used over the years, even getting into the cars, Aston Martin DB5. And
yeah,
I mean, what's your favorite of the cars or gadgets that just makes Bond Bond?
Well, I love the original DB5 and Goldfinger. That's a phenomenal car with all that gadgets. The one they used in, No Time to Die. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm writing a spy thriller myself, and that was the title of it. And I started this thing, like, you know, 10 years ago, and they stole my title, those bastards.
They owe you some money.
Well, you can't copyright titles. So I have to change the title of my book. It's been taking me a long time, but I've been doing it slowly, but I'm almost completely done with it. It was one of those things. I was traveling for DreamWorks, and I was supervising a lot of their dubs all over the world. And it gave me a lot of fun places to visit and think of Bond, you know, going, he's always international, he's always going everywhere. And I wrote most of the book on the planes that I was traveling on, you know, and it's a really fun, if you're a Bond fan, I think you'll like my book, because it's a spy thriller, and it's that kind of a thing. And I kind of wanted to do my own thing, but I can't believe they stole my title. And anyway, I was going to say something. I completely forgot. I got off topic here. Do we remember what I was talking about? I don't remember.
We were talking about the DB5 and how.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh, my God. I thought we're going to have to back the tape up. no, I love the original DB5 because of all the gadgets. But the one car that I really, really loved was Timothy Dalton's in. What was the one? It was
Living Daylights.
Living Daylights. Yeah. Because, and the reason I liked it was because. It was the only Aston Martin convertible in the series. Mm. And I love convertibles. I have a convertible, and I love convertibles. So that was the only Aston Martin convertible they had in the series. And I thought, that's really cool. So I liked that car a lot. That was a very cool one. But, you know, they're all gorgeous. The new ones are, I probably couldn't even fit in the new one. I mean, they look pretty tiny, actually. You know, they look so big and bold on the screen, but when you actually are next to one, they're kind of tiny, kind of like, it's like Porsches, you know, they look great, but then you try to, you know, I'm too big for those. I have shoes bigger than those cars, you know.
I think the same goes through out here. We've got an Aston Martin dealer out here on the Gold Coast, and they look, I think it's the length of the car that really makes it for me, like, look at it. But once you actually stand next to them, even the cabin is very low,
it's,
you know,
low, I'm, yeah.
I'm a pretty wide guy, and, you know, with wide shoulders, and even getting into those seats, you know, it's comfortable, but it's not to drive, though. You know, it's a weird feel.
You and I would not be comfortable in that car, I don't think, you know.
But I tell you, we're into convertibles here too. We used to have a MR2, we used to call the Budgie, because it's this bright yellow that was on there too. And, you know, the Japanese cars, I like that to a certain extent, where you
see. Those are nice cars. Those are great cars.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful car.
Was it a stick?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Those cars, well, because they're really sporty cars, those cars. And here's the other problem. You know, people today, the kids today, they don't know how to drive a stick. They think it's like, you know. And I heard that when Daniel Craig was first signed up as Bond, he didn't know how to drive a stick, and he had to learn how to drive a stick to drive that Aston Martin. So I thought that was kind of funny. It's like, who doesn't know how to drive a stick? But, you know, I'm old.
So. I love it. The fact that, too, now in 2020 when COVID hit and everything started closing down, I got really back into the books. I haven't read the books since I was probably a teenager.
Yeah, they're great.
They really are. Like, I mean, there's a reason why they chose the franchise, is because Fleming knew how to write a ripping yarn.
Yeah, no, he was a great writer. And, you know, the thing I loved about his books is that you always learned something from his books that was apart from the James Bond story. He always brought in elements of things that were interesting and unique. And I always liked that. And I try to do that in my book as well. It's interesting. The Spy Who Loved Me, the book, I'm not crazy about that book because it's written from a third person. It's written from a woman point of view, and Fleming was writing it from another character's point of view. But what was interesting about that was she was in this hotel, and there was a lot of gangsters in the hotel. And when Bond comes and knocks on her door, she thinks he's a gangster too, because he's got a big scar on his face. So, you know, everybody thinks that because of the movies that James Bond is just this handsome, you know, gorgeous guy. But I thought that was interesting, and it made Daniel Craig's Bond even more believable, because, you know, he has a rough, you know, he is a, you know, it's more of a gritty look than some of the other Bonds who look very polished. And, you know, we come to think of Bond as being very sophisticated, polished, and he is, he has those elements, but there is something that's also kind of dangerous and rough about him. That if he does not have that, it does not make doesn't make him Bond, you know. So I thought that they chose well with him, and you know, people were just going, you know, batshit about Daniel Craig. Said, oh no, he's going to be terrible. But he proved everybody wrong, I think.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the thing is, they've had some very crazy movies. I mean, in terms of what they're at. I mean, it doesn't get crazier than Moonraker, which I kind of like for what it is, but I mean, it is not the James Bond, certainly not the novel. Moonraker novel's quite different.
Well, that's that was another thing. They were greatly influenced by Star Wars, and they wanted to do their own kind of Bond version of Star Wars. But, you know, Jaws falls to the earth and he's okay. You know, he's like up in space. He falls to the earth. He's okay. It's like, okay. All right. That's believable. Yeah, sometimes I feel like they really stretch credulity way too far, and I think I like it better when it's more believable. And they can make the fantastic believable, but it, you know, they have to do it with, based in some reality. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. And this is why it's great that you're writing your own spy thriller, because you know, through obviously watching the movies, reading the books, and just having a good sense of. Yeah, being in the industry, you know what a good story is, and you know.
I hope so. I hope people like it. I think it's very. I mean, I've been going over with my wife. My wife's been helping me edit it, and I just, you know, I go, hey, this is not bad. I go, this is you know, it's Listen, it's not you know, it's not going to be you know, War and Peace or you know, anything like that. But it's I think it's a really fun read. It's a good entertaining book, and I think it's something if you're, you know, on the beach or you're traveling or you're on a plane or something, I think it would be a good read, you know?
Nice. So, and what's been your favorite part of the writing process? Is it getting the first draft out and having a read, is just seeing where you are and then writing on top of that? I mean, there's so many different creative parts of writing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not, you know, out of all the things that I do, I'm not an expert in writing novels, but, the way that I do it, and I know some people, you know, people that are professional novel writers, they'll do like an outline and lay down everything, so everything kind of falls into place. I don't write that way at all. I do it very exponentially, and I just, that's probably not the right word. I do it, you know, where I just kind of...
Spontaneously,
thank you. And I just kind of let it go, and I almost let the writing write itself, and it does. It's interesting. It'll take you into places. You go, oh, well, this is interesting. Where are we going here? You know, and I just think I don't want to... because I'm not that kind of an anal person, right? You know what I mean? So I think that it's more fun for me to write that way. If I had to write to a outline and all that thing, I just think it kind of takes all the fun out of it. Now, I know a lot of real writers would disagree with me on that and say, no, that's the way to do it. But, you know, I just, the way I know other people write the way I've written, and I kind of like it. And it, like I say, it kind of leaves you open to just the story kind of taking off on its own. And it's just, mm-hmm. I really like that aspect of it. So that's really been fun.
And like you say, it's you know, if you're getting surprises, you know, then your readers are going to get surprises from it. It's a natural
yeah,
way, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Just like as a performer, if you're having fun up there, the audience is going to have fun. You know, if you're miserable and you hate it, then the audience is going to hate it. You know, so part of being a good 100%. Actor is making it, even if you hate it, making it look like you're enjoying the shit out of it. You know.
You know, what I love too about, you know, looking back on these movies was the action set pieces. I mean, they really are, you know, it's everyone coming together, not just the actors, the director, but these craftsmen making these sets with all the tricks in them and stuff like that. I mean,
phenomenal.
I mean, you know, even something like a train carriage and From Russia with Love, and yet it works so well.
Yeah, that was, that fight between him and Red Grant was one of the greatest fights in all the Bond movies. That was just an incredible fight and very believable, you know, very real and very believable. The volcano in You Only Live Twice, I mean, that set piece was phenomenal, and that cost, you know, that cost probably more than the whole budget of Dr. No just to create that thing. But the idea of having a volcano with a, you know, with a fake top that opened up, I mean, it's brilliant. It's just brilliant, you know, the stuff they come up with. And, you know, they've been doing it a long time. I told you I was doing stuff for DreamWorks, and I was all over the world. And one of the jobs I had, I was supervising the German dub of Gladiator. And we mixed it at Pinewood Studios, where they shoot all the Bond movies. So one of the biggest thrills for me was to go actually see the 007 stage that they have there at Pinewood. And that was just, it was, I can't tell you how fun that was for me. I was like a little kid again, you know. It was just awesome. And that is a that is an incredible studio. I mean, we have studios over here, and they're usually just ginormous. And it's not that big of a studio, but it's a very cool studio, very classy studio. They had a wonderful producers lunchroom that we used to go to. That was they had taken the wood from an old yacht, and they had lined the room, and it just everything looked so incredible, and it opened up onto a garden. And it was just lovely, and the food was lovely, and everything was, you know, it was white napkin service and everything. It was just, it was really lovely. I had a great time there. I could have stayed there for a much longer time, but it was great. We had a lot of fun. Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, there's been so many great, you know, obviously the studio there, but then, I mean, they go out into these locations, which, I mean, look at the islands like in The Man with the Golden Gun. I mean, you just don't see locations like they're very clever in what they choose.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's amazing. I know he was anxious, Daniel Craig was anxious to get off of the Bond train, but, you know, honestly, for me as an actor thinking, God, that would be the plumbest role of all time that I can't even imagine. I mean, I think Roger Moore had it right. Just write it out and have fun and enjoy yourself and look at all the incredible locations you get to go to and, you know, the people you get to work with. And it's mind boggling. I mean, you know, I just think it's an incredible gift to be able to do that.
You know? 100%. And do you think, like, moving forward, they should go and start looking at the books again and maybe adapting some of those ones that either haven't had a chance or maybe taking some of, for example, Moonraker and doing it right?
Yeah, perhaps. And also, aside from Ian Fleming, there's, you know, God, there's 10, 20 other writers who have continued writing Bond novels. And just check those out and see if any of those are any good. I know there's, you know, like Colonel Sun is another one that Ian Fleming didn't write. But a lot of people like that one and think that would make a great movie, you know. And, you know, why not? You know, why you don't have to stick with one writer source material. They obviously haven't stuck with one Bond, so why not move on to other source material, you know?
100%. And the other thing, too, is interesting about Fleming himself. I mean, obviously, he has had a career in naval intelligence, even had his little crew of commandos that would go behind enemy lines and do whatever needed to be done. There's even a book, I don't know if you've read this one, it's called Operation JB or OPJB, and it's about, I think it was a crew of his that went across into German lines and just their raids and stuff like that. But it was by a guy who calls himself Christopher Creighton. And I think he got into acting and stuff like that afterwards. But what was interesting is he was talking about what Fleming was actually like, was so much more like probably M than Bond.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, interesting. Well, and also Christopher Lee, who was in SSI they called the old...
OSS, was it something?
English OSS, yeah. OSS
and the SAS, the Special Air Service.
Yeah, he was actually one of the spies and did a lot of stuff, and you know, he was a pretty tough character, Christopher Lee. So, and he was pretty tall, so maybe I could have been a spy. See there.
You know, it's interesting because he's always talked about, like, you know, having to play golf with his cousin, obviously Ian Fleming.
Yeah.
And how, you know, really he could have been Bond. I mean, like you say, it's my Bond hot watch right there. Ooh, there we are. Look at that.
That's nice. From that's from the first Pierce movie that he did, Goldeneye. Beautiful. I just got that back from the factory, actually. They renovated the whole watch for me. It was great. I was glad to get that back. Beautiful. But I'm a huge Bond fan. The only thing I don't have an Aston Martin. I actually have a Walther PPK, but I do not have an Aston Martin. One day, maybe. But like I said, it's hard for me to fit in them.
If you could choose one of the Aston Martins, which model would you go? Would you go DB5?
I probably would grab that one that the convertible. I just love that so much. Yeah. Unless the new one, brand new one, if they had a convertible model in that one, that would be pretty amazing. But I would be very happy with Timothy Dalton's convertible. Oh, yeah. I just thought
it's
that was
a beautiful car.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, the funny thing about Bond is, you know, he's supposed to be a spy. He's supposed to be under the covers there, you know, and he drives around in this car that everybody looks, you know, like, oh, look, you know, it's like everybody sees that car, you know. He goes into these hotels, everybody knows him. Oh, hi, Mr. Bond. You know, he's like, yeah, so he's not that, it's not that undercover. You know what I mean?
No, no, that's right. I think the one thing I've really missed out of all the repartee is when we see Bond walk in and Q's trying to get everything together and trying to have it all work perfectly. And Bond just, it's a playhouse for, you know, of toys for Bond. He just walks in and everything's going haywire. I mean, Sean did it so well right up to, I think, you know, to me, Pierce had it really well with Desmond Llewellyn there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really sad. That one when he goes, always have an exit, and he goes down the stairs. And that was the last time we saw Q. And it was almost like they knew he was going to, you know, either die or they were retiring him or they wanted to give him a little moment there. But yeah, that was actually kind of sad. Now he in Dr. No, they had a different Q. They had a different guy playing Q, but I guess he wasn't available. That guy's probably kicking himself too. And yeah. Like he and George Lazenby are like hitting each other, you know, but but then Desmond Llewellyn got it and he just, you know, he had it for a very long time and he was, you know, very, very happy. I'm sure he was happy to do that. It was kind of interesting that Q kept getting older and older and the Bonds kept getting younger and younger. So I know.
And I like that, which of the Daltons was it? Might have been License to Kill, where they actually gave him something to do and sent him out on mission.
Right, yes. That was License to Kill, yeah. That was a fun movie. Ooh, yeah, yeah, I liked that. And my buddy Kerry is in there, Kerry Takanaga. Takakawa? Yeah. I did a movie of the week with him, and also he's in Mortal Kombat. I'm Raiden in Mortal Kombat and the Joker, as you know. And he was Shang Tzu, I think, was the name of his character. And we met up at a convention, and we just hit it off really well. And he is super, super nice guy. And, you know, that was very cool. He was in a Bond movie. It's interesting. I didn't really get to ask him about the Bond stuff. And I kind of would have liked to. But, yeah, he's had a very nice career, that guy. He's done very well.
Isn't it nice? People like yourself and Alan and Kerry as well. Kerry Takagawa, he's a very lovely guy.
Yes.
This is the thing is, it rings true. Nice people reap great rewards, and you guys are all doing fantastic.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. Well, same with you, buddy. I miss you. I hope I can come out to Australia and see you guys one of these days. It's been long overdue, and I know that our friend who used to run the con out there is no longer running it. So I hope we get a chance to be invited back at some point. We would love to come out. We love Australia. We love the Australian people.
We love you too.
Thank you. We had so much fun. We were out there. I think we did three shows out there, but it was a long time ago. So I would love to return. So maybe we'll get back there one of these days.
And you who are running Supernova out there now, or even Oz Comic Con, and you're listening to this here podcast right now, you've heard it. Richard and Ellen Epcar would both love to come out. And
they would.
You know, I mean, who wouldn't want these amazing and lovely people? I mean, genuinely lovely people come out and, you know, not only tell you about their career, but also have a good sit down, a chin wag, as we say, and a good laugh. And you do.
I love that expression, chin wag. I love
chin
that.
Wag, yeah. That's wonderful. And, you know, the Gold Coast is the place. It really is. I mean, this is Hollywood, gorgeous. Australia.
Just gorgeous. We had so much fun there. And like I said, the people were terrific and just a blast. It couldn't have been any better. And we were there with Christopher Lloyd and just a great group, George Takei, and we had so much fun. Everybody was just wonderful. Couldn't have been nicer. So
it really is. I mean, it's a nice time of the year too when they did it. It's not too cold, not too hot. Sort of right in the middle of pure Queensland, as we say, weather.
Perfect. Sounds perfect. Well, listen, yes. I hate to do this to you, but I got to get out of here. I've got to go do a job. But I wanted to make sure that we caught up and did this because we've been talking about it. And, you know, if we left anything unsaid, then we'll do it again at another time.
Anytime, mate. And it's always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Always a pleasure, my friend. All the best.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.